The Financial Sense Midweek Edition with Jim Poplava. Delving in-depth with authors and experts into the key economic issues.
Well, as science and medical science progresses, we're learning more about the benefits of exercise. But there's a special exercise that has great wellness benefits, and that is yoga. Joining me on the program today as my special guest is Judy Barr. She's yoga manager at the Cleveland Clinic Wellness Institute. And Judy, before we get into the particulars of yoga, I wonder if you could give our listeners a little bit of your background, because I think you woke up to these horrific pains in your mid-40s, and you were told that you had the back of an 85-year-old and would likely end up in a wheelchair. That's not the kind of thing that one wants to hear when you're in your 40s, because we think we're at the prime of our life.
You bet. It was something that was not very easy to believe, although I had lived with chronic pain for about 5 years or so, a little bit more, just begging to have people, you know, somebody help me figure this out. And although I went to plenty of different doctors and physical therapists and psychologists and all, it shook down to, no, you have a back of an 85-year-old person, this is what you have, and you potentially will be crippled as time goes on because your back is so bad. And I thought, wow, that's pretty hard to believe. But, you know, the pain definitely said otherwise.
Was this a result? I mean, were you in a car accident? Did you have an injury? Or was this something that was developed genetically?
Well, I don't know that it was genetic. I think it was probably the process of just my life. I had been very active, although probably not even as active as some of the extreme sports when you look at people these days. But, you know, in high school, I was a cheerleader and I had always been a dancer. And it evidently had something to do with that. Woke up and, as I said, I had such a pain, and it's like it just reached its edge where the arthritis and whatever it was must have just hit that spot where it made it feel so bad that I was in 120% pain all the time instead of 100%, because it just always seemed so bad. So, but what I found, and here's where yoga came into play, is that there's many layers to pain, and the pain of waking up and having that issue and what the x-rays and the MRI say versus some of the other layers of what really can cause pain is that process that I learned. And ultimately, as I healed myself with, you know, a lot of work, a lot of focus, I ended up seeing a beautiful message from it, which meant for me, now I need to help other people with the same circumstance. So yoga is a very multi-layered, there's a lot of depth to it if we wish. If not, it could be as simple as we're moving our body and we're getting better fluidity, better flexibility, or it can go so deep as to help one heal deep-seated pain and anger and frustration and hurt, along with physical pain, to a place where 20 years later and I'm better than ever and teaching and walking and no cane, no pain, nothing.
You know, I've heard all kinds of benefits from yoga, from helping to de-stress, from helping blood pressure problems, and there's all kinds of other ailments. I interviewed a gentleman that he was controlling his Parkinson's disease with yoga. What is it about yoga? I mean, this is something that goes back, as I understand it, you know more than I do on this. Doesn't this go back like thousands of years?
Yes, it does. And although it sounds complicated, it's so simple sometimes, I think we underestimate its power. You know, there's many, many layers. In yoga, we say there's 8 limbs. And in the United States, in America, we know about, you know, the postures, we know about the breathing, the meditation, but there's many more pieces officially in the tradition of yoga. But what ends up happening as you practice, and if mindfulness is a huge piece in this, meaning that we're present, and that's one of the biggest pieces as we peel away the layers, is that in mindfulness, simply we're noticing we're not balancing very well today. So we notice it, we don't judge it, we kind of go with the flow with it. Or we're bending over to do a stretch and we realize as we're bending that really feels tight. And it's about self-observation. that we begin to observe ourselves, noticing that, geez, this is tight, and whether or not our mind starts moving with it, geez, I'm going to beat myself up because I should be able to do this, or geez, I'm going to wimp out. It's the entire process of being able to observe ourselves. So one layer or one piece of it is to be able to observe, to be able to make more non-emotional choices on how we respond. Just being able to look at what is, and certainly not diminish that if something hurts or feels good, that, you know, we certainly feel it, but just be able to make non-emotional decisions. In other words, our yoga can help us change behaviors, literally. Because we're coming in the moment with our breath, which is the elixir with all this, because we're doing our work with breath awareness, we're also beginning to start to make a physiological change, meaning that we can affect our blood pressure because our respiratory rate is either deeper because we're doing deep breathing or quieting or more balancing. And so the effect of the breath work also helps us on a physiological level, meaning that it will affect our heart rate, it will affect our respiratory. It can affect our immune system ultimately, because as we are learning to calm our nervous system, and by the way, that's the whole reason I'm here at the Cleveland Clinic, is that science has shown the wonderful benefits of yoga on handling our stress. And because of that ability, we're able to affect our body systems and our health in really a profound way.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, when you began this process of healing, you tried a number of things that wasn't helping you. You were in chronic pain. I guess, Judy, how long did the healing process take? And how was it that yoga helped to heal you? Was it straightening out your spine? Was it making your body more flexible? Explain the healing process that you went through leading you to where you are today, which is at the Cleveland Clinic Wellness Institute.
What I began to understand, because I was young and vital, I was still, one of the things that I was doing is I was ballet dancer, and I was still dancing in my mid-40s, which is pretty much unheard of. Not professionally, but I still was doing a fair amount of dancing, and, you know, from one day I was fine, the next day I wasn't. So after I was told that I was hopeless, began to look at it and say, okay, this can't be. Now, how am I going to help myself? What can I do? And therein lies a very distinct difference, is that if we give our power over, although of course we respect doctors, I mean, I work with doctors, we respect what they say. They have history, they have things to go on that they've seen, and they can say, well, potentially this can happen to you, but no one really knows for sure. And so I started realizing that that perhaps may not be the case for me. Maybe there's more that I can do. So I asked the neurosurgeon at the time and radiologist, the two that were the primary in this decision-making on how to care for my back. I said, give me a year, and if I can affect any changes in my pain, I'll need you to help me get off the medicines and, you know, help to get me on the right path. And so there was a knowledge inside of me, there was something inside me that said, you need to look deeper. There's more to this than plopping myself on a doctor's gurney and say, help fix me. You know, the key of not becoming a victim to the pain. And so what I've learned through the years and what I taught myself and worked with is that there was a message in this pain for me, and that although there's a physical pain, there's also an emotional, a mental, and a spiritual pain that was going with it. And all of it culminated for me when I was 45 and I woke up that one morning when this happened. So to begin the process of healing myself, it was really a solo thing. And this was in the 90s. It was the mid-90s. So there wasn't a lot about, you know, like, so in other words, the secret hadn't come out and all the things about, as much about self-empowerment and affirmations and all. I'd read Deepak Chopra, and he was talking about that, you know, we have the ability to heal ourselves from within. And I thought, well, what do I have to lose? I'm going to try it. So I made it really simple for myself. I said, I looked at how I was handling my stress, how I was eating, how I was sleeping, and whatever I could do to exercise. Now, I couldn't even get on the ground anymore. I mean, I couldn't sit down on the ground. I couldn't bend over. I mean, you'd never known that I was dancing ballet a year or two before that happened on stage. You know, nobody would have guessed it. And so I slowed my life down and looked at my stress levels and started doing very easy, gentle breathing and stretching. And as that happened, it was a few weeks into it. I couldn't even bend over. I'd cry every time I would move because it hurt so bad. But very slowly, with just completely looking at my lifestyle and all my relationships and everything. What energy am I putting out there? What energy am I allowing in? And I started to realize that it was as much that I wasn't in a good relationship at the time. There was a lot of pressure in my work. I wasn't taking care of myself as well. There were all these areas. And I believe that through my meditation, through my breath work, from easy stretching, so it wasn't like it was everything was gentle, soft pieces, but it was as much as understanding the energy of what was the universe trying to tell me here. And the bottom line for me is don't let yourself get crushed with what was going on. And when I really thought from an energetic standpoint what was going on in my body, it felt like my spine was crushed, you know? And so there was this parallel to the pain and anxiety that I felt, and I didn't allow some of the pain of childhood and everything to come out, so I just did an overhaul for myself, and it took me about 2 years. Now, I didn't have a coach. Right now, you know, when I do private work, when I had my private practice, that was what I did. I helped people through their pain, finding the message in it, gave them the gentle, easy breath and stretches and things to activate their body, but it was much as the mind and the heart that needed healing as it was the body. And thus, I believe, well, I'm living proof that I'm now 64 years old and I can do anything that I was able to do even when I was younger without the residual. But I let go of a lot of stuff, a lot of emotion, a lot of pain, a lot of things that were going on in my life. So it's really complicated to try to explain. It isn't just one piece. It's kind of like the whole picture. And I had to be ready to face it, though. So most people, you know, people want to get better, but no, I'm not so sure I want to go there, you know. And by doing that, here I am. And that, I felt, was a huge message for me to be able to help other people. I also feel there's a message, and it also helps us in our spiritual and our God's work to say, geez, now I've learned this. Now I want to be able to help others realize that they can do it too.
Judy, the Cleveland Clinic is well known for its treatment of and research in heart disease. Explain wellness yoga, because it's now been incorporated at the Cleveland Wellness Clinic. What is wellness yoga? What distinguishes wellness yoga from, let's say, hatha yoga or the other types of yoga? Is it a set of procedures? Is it modification of yoga poses or breathing? Or is it a combination of all of the above?
Well, it really is a combination of all of the above. You know, we can't trademark a particular style of yoga. And, you know, really, in essence, nothing is new. It's been these pieces and parts have been around forever. But how I've bundled it is a direct experience of what I went through in my pain and how, you know, I couldn't have done a traditional yoga pose if my life depended on it, but I was able to do a version. So thus, having been a dancer, I was able to look at things and say, oh, if I only do this one piece of it, then I can do this, and then I'll keep building on it to be able to work up to it. So wellness yoga, it's an inclusive style. It's based on all the traditions of yoga. It's very heart-centered. So in other words, when I train students, they'll come to the Cleveland Clinic and learn. If someone wants to become a certified yoga teacher, they can come to the Cleveland Clinic and learn our style. It's heart-centered. In other words, we teach from our heart, and we also mold the yoga around the student, not asking the student to mold themselves around us. I believe, and this is my number completely, but I think there's a very small percentage of the population, maybe 10% of the population, that can do a traditional yoga class. Some people can't even get on the ground for many reasons. And so the yoga is completely inclusive. It's done using props, mainly a chair. Eventually people can get on the ground if they wish. There's a lot of spiritual work done. We meet people where they are, and it's become just a wonderful success here at the clinic because it opens the door so that anybody, the people that really need it, the people that are waiting for a heart or lung transplant, or people that have MS, or people that have, you know, cancer or metabolic challenges, meaning, you know, some heart problems or whatever, we can adapt it in such a way that anybody can get the benefits of it. Yoga is not just about the posture. It doesn't matter if somebody can touch their toes or do a backbend. It's what we learn about ourselves when we're doing it and how we grow as a result. How can we become contemplative? How can we find peace and joy in our day? And as we're able to come to a place where we understand what peacefulness means for us, what's peaceful for me may not be peaceful for someone else. It helps our quality of life, and in turn, that affects our biology. So wellness yoga is a combination of all those things, but it's inclusive, it's adaptive, and it comes from the heart.
And Judy, how did you get involved with the Cleveland Clinic? And is it Dr. Michael Roizen is chief wellness officer there? How did he change the emphasis of yoga at the clinic?
Well, they ended up seeking me out because they knew I had a specialty in chronic pain and chronic disease. And as Dr. Roizen and Dr. Toby Cosgrove, our CEO, they have been watching the numbers. They see what healthcare costs are like. They realize that if we continue on the same path, the trajectory that we're on with chronic disease, the cost of healthcare will become so outrageous that it will take up any money that anybody has in order for us to be able to survive, and there won't be money for other things. And they've had enough experience realizing that it's time to start to look at how are we going to handle the whole person? How are we going to be able to look at other support besides how we've been helping our patients? So between Dr. Cosgrove and Dr. Roizen, the Wellness Institute began, and this is completely about wellness and lifestyle and how our food, how our nutrition, and how stress affects that profoundly. 80% of our lifestyle diseases are caused by stress, stress-related challenges. And so Dr. Roizen, as I was brought in, because I was really considered an expert here in Cleveland with chronic pain and chronic disease, I was brought in, and as they got to know me better and realize how inclusive the yoga is and how it can be so far-reaching, they've continued to promote it and support it, and it's used in so many different areas now that we're working. There's still plenty of growth that we have. We're a huge institution, but their support of that, science-based, we've shown, you know, there's research after research after research showing how yoga can support stress, and so they've decided they continue to support it and continue to do now. It's just a dream come true. I'm the only one in the country that has a job in a large major medical institution like this that runs all the yoga programs for patients, employees, for families.
Judy, is this something that, I mean, you obviously explored this. You started doing breathing and certain exercises. For the average person listening to the show, maybe they have chronic pain, maybe they have high blood pressure, maybe they don't have a balance, maybe they're not as flexible. Would you recommend getting instruction before practicing yoga? Would it be better that way? Or are there books, tapes, and videos that can guide one to do it on your own?
Well, I would say that it's certainly better to be with a qualified teacher, someone that understands more of the therapeutic value of yoga. The hard part is if a doctor says, oh, I want you to do yoga, and they walk into a corner studio or a studio in their city, and that studio is practicing really hard, very traditional yoga, they're going to get pretty disheartened quickly when they realize that it may not be accessible to them. So it's still worth a try, though. So my suggestion for anyone out there would be to seek out yoga programs that are either gentle or very beginner classes and ask if that class would be appropriate for them, how they do it. There is certainly plenty of things online, and I've got a DVD out. I've got two DVDs out here at the clinic exemplifying wellness yoga that has really been a huge success because it's so accessible. And, you know, the way I say it is there's an eloquency in the simplicity of what we do. And so there's simple stretches, simple motions, simple breath done mindfully, but yet it could have a profound effect on ourselves. So I can get you a link if you so desire, but if they would like to get that, that could help them, and I would feel safe with somebody trying it without a teacher. But generally, it's best to have someone observe you doing it.
And would you also say probably learning a little bit about the person's background? Because obviously, if you're going to a yoga studio and you're in a class and there's 20-year-olds and 30-year-olds and you're a 60-year-old, obviously, you're not going to be as flexible or may have, you know, less flexibility than, you know, the other students in the class. So maybe dealing with somebody or an instructor or a clinic or someplace that are more attuned to a person's age. It's the same thing that I have found with, you know, personal trainers. So would you say that you might want to specialize or try to find somebody that is more geared to your own ailments and your age?
Absolutely. That's why I say, you know, trying to find a class that says beginner or gentle or chair, finding out how much experience they have. Someone doesn't have to have a huge title behind their name if they've, you know, if they've been teaching for 15 years. But I wouldn't suggest somebody 60 years old going to a class with 20 or 30 year olds because it just, you know, too often we get embarrassed, we try to do something, and we can hurt ourselves. We can hurt ourselves anywhere, but we can hurt ourselves in yoga. And, you know, that's not the idea of it. So it would be seek out, make sure that the person has experience, that perhaps they even have specialized experience in if you have osteoporosis or if you have, you know, if there's something to see if they have a specialty in it. And there's more and more people being trained that way, but I would not suggest going into a class like that. So, yeah, you're absolutely right in bringing that up.
And Judy, finally, have you found through your journey through yoga and your expertise that you've developed over the years, have you found a particular book for beginners or something that, let's say, somebody listening to this broadcast might find useful?
That's a hard question because I've found books, you know, on meditation that I find are good, and that's meditation and breath. So I guess the best thing to do would be if someone goes to a bookstore and sees something that seems of interest to read it. But no, I really can't suggest anything. I mean, I am actually, you know, writing a book that'll happen in a couple of years, and not to say that might be the only book, but if I'm looking at an audience or students, potential students that don't know anything about yoga and want to start, I would say just whatever they find on the bookshelf. I mean, for meditation and breath work, Jon Kabat-Zinn is a wonderful author. Thich Nhat Hanh and also Pema Chodron, they have really nice books about breath work, about meditation, about just learning how to be, and you can find quite a bit of peacefulness from it. And there's certainly great books out there. I wouldn't say that there's not. I just don't have a favorite, really, on yoga.
Well, listen, Judy, if our listeners would like to find out more information, I guess you're a yoga manager at the Cleveland Clinic of Wellness Institute. Is there a website? Do you have information on your wellness approach to yoga?
They can email yoga at CCF, so that's Cleveland Clinic Foundation, ccf.org.
Yoga at ccf.org.
Right, and then the webpage is clevelandclinic.org/wellness yoga.
And that'll explain a lot of the things that we just discussed. Well, listen, it's been a fascinating conversation. You know, I've always exercised and I've taken up, you know, weightlifting, cardio. Now I'm adding Pilates and yoga, and I find what a world of difference. It's a great de-stressor in terms of bringing down blood pressure. And it's amazing this ancient form of exercise developed thousands and thousands of years is now making its way into mainstream medicine for its healthful benefits. Judy, I want to thank you for joining us on the program.
Thank you for having me, and such a pleasure.
You're welcome.
Well, I guess you're going to need some of Judy's instruction to keep your blood pressure down if you deal with taxes much more. What is really astounding in the idea of socialism, because that's what it is. You know, you can call it democratic socialism, Marxist socialism. It doesn't make any difference. It's pretty much the same thing. Margaret Thatcher was absolutely right. You know, the problem with it is that sooner or later you run out of somebody else's money. And there is no lack of politicos who want to vote new favors and transfer more money. And of course, even in the wealth transfers, Jim, a huge amount of that is consumed in the government apparatus and never gets to the target anyway. And so I'm not sure why this keeps flying, other than the fact that free things sell. But when people feel a lot of pain, you know, if you look at, say, for example, Greece, there were more demonstrations over there about more austerity. Then the people go, well, we didn't bargain for this. And we didn't know this was going to be the other end of it. We're not going to put up with that. You think we're going to pay this bill? But this is the way politics goes.
And it's very enticing when somebody says, I'm going to give you free stuff. You know, I'm going to give you something free and we're going to make somebody else pay for it. Problem is, we all pay for it, either in lower interest rates, inflation, or taxes.
You know, I was doing a debate a year or so ago with a gentleman on the program. I said, you need to literally take the tax code, throw it in the trash, throw it in the shredder. You can't reform it because everybody will be in there tugging and pulling. Put in a very simple tax, and you have to make it a constitutional amendment so it can't be monkeyed with year after year after year, you know, that it's overt. But again, then people go, oh, well, no, you can't do that. That hurts the poor. That does that. As soon as you try to make anything work, it doesn't work because somebody objects to it. So I think we're sort of on a railroad train. My analogy of the railroad train has always been it's both Democrats and Republicans, and about, 3 miles down the track, the bridge is out over this ravine. And the Democrats are saying, more power, the train will just jump the ravine, don't worry about it. And the Republicans are saying, run to the back car and you'll be safe. Well, as I've always said, doesn't leave us with things not to talk about, does it?
No, but you know, the real key thing here is the two biggest expenses in retirement are healthcare. What you'll pay on medical expenses, as we mentioned at the top of the broadcast, $144,000 for a male, $156,000 for a woman. The difference is women live longer. And the second biggest expense in retirement is going to be your taxes. So those are the two biggies if you are heading into retirement, which is incumbent upon you now that we're in the middle of tax season. Do yourself a favor. Know your marginal tax brackets. Know how you can save taxes, whether it's your income taxes or make your investments non-taxable or at least taxable at a lower rate, as we discussed last week with tax preference investing. In the meantime, well, we're out of time as usual. On behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. Until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSN. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense NewsHour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the NewsHour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.